Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, the site manager at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. And we had fun for a week because the Hawks like won a few games, but now we're back to just the good old fashioned terrible team that we've all come to know and despise over the last few months. And I've got all my usual line mates with me this evening to talk about that team. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, you can find on Twitter at Jehovah's Witness. It is Shepherd Price.
So next week is the Royal Rumble, which is happening in San Antonio. I'm going to it. I bought tickets before I realized that Vince McMahon was back in charge of WWE. And now I kind of want to sell those tickets. But, well,
yeah.
Triple H and Vince McMahon are two entirely different people. And Triple H should definitely be in charge of WWE now.
I feel bad for the, like, as we've discussed several times on these airwaves, like, I've been dipping my toe back into the pro wrestling thing, haven't gotten back into WWE at all, but I feel bad for people that have been watching that for a long time, and then just all of this happens, and not only does, like, Vince McMahon's gonna coming back, and now, like, the Live Golf people are supposed to be buying out WWE,
so yep, there's just
all this... all this ugliness at the top of the pyramid now for WWE. So, Paul sucks. I feel bad for all those fans, but like, there's so many places like that these days. I don't even know where to go anymore. To AEW. That's
yes.
There you go. So speaking of AEW, also with us this evening, he's on Twitter at Mill182 and he is the Second City Hockey. What Eva Hendricks is to Charlie Bliss. It's Mill Savage.
I don't really have anything for you.
Okay.
The Hawks are bad again.
I was going to say, neither do the Hawks. So.
Yeah, the Hawks are bad again, and and wrestling might be bad on some networks.
But aren't you overjoyed about the return of Adam Cole?
I am. I am very happy that he's – mostly I'm just happy that he's okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, for my own selfish entertainment, anytime a wrestler or an athlete gets hurt, of course you want them back, but – I'm very happy that he is okay because concussions are really awful. And the more we learn about them, the more we see how terrible they can be for people affected. So yes, happy he's okay.
I think that's the one side of that whole business that I have not fully appreciated until now, of like how badly the athletes in that world get their bodies destroyed. Like, it's like, they're just like any other sports athlete. They're more sports entertainment. I get it. But, their bodies get destroyed just like any hockey or football or whatever sport player you have. So,
I think it's getting older, you know, like even if you don't like wrestling anymore, or if you never liked it, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, like we know it's not real. Like Chris Jericho's throwing fireballs at people. Like, we know it's fake, but
we know it's not real. But when somebody who's supposed to spike you through a table and they miss and just spike you on the concrete floor, you can't fake that.
Just because it's not a competition doesn't mean it's not dangerous.
Exactly.
So good on them. Thank you for your service.
All right, well, now we have to wake her up because our opening tangent went into wrestling, but also with us this evening. She's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR, where she is the Second City Hockey Bulletin Wall of Text. It's Betsy.
That's okay. I was scrolling through like Instagram while you were doing that, and the thing that just came up on my feed was Alexander Skarsgård kissing Henrik Lundqvist while sitting next to Ryan Reynolds at a Rangers game. So I was like, cool, I'm distracted. It's fine.
Wasn't that like a week or two ago that
but it just hit my Instagram reels, so I'm excited about it. I'm not going to lie, I haven't been paying attention to hockey. Like, the fact that the Hawks are so bad kind of hurts, like, wanting to watch any hockey a little bit. Like, does that make sense? So I haven't really been keeping up.
You know what? That's a great place to start because Well, obviously, with the Blackhawks being bad again, there's not much intrigue about them. And that is something I was thinking about recently, that I feel like I don't really watch as much of the other teams in the league. Because, you know, when the Hawks are good, like, you would watch the other Western Conference teams to see what it would be like if the Hawks have to face them in the playoffs. And then you watch the Eastern Conference to see who could be lurking in the Stanley Cup final. And, like, I've watched some games, but I feel like if they're on, it's just like the Hawks teams now. It's more like background noise. I'm not really watching it intently. I just kind of lost, like, it's just this season's just not fun.
No, this season's also weird. Like, the Kraken are unexpectedly good. Like, teams that are supposed to be good, like the Avalanche, are either too hurt or are just not playing up to their hype. It's a weird season in terms of the NHL right now.
Yeah, I mean, some of the league-wide stuff, like New Jersey's really good and fun this year.
Yeah,
which is cool. It's a new face atop the standings, which is always good to have. Like, the Bruins are obscenely good, and I don't like it. And I hope that
they might not lose 10 games.
Well, my one thought with them is, like, all of their studs are, well, not all of their studs, but a significant portion of their top producers are, like, well into their 30s. So yeah, they're good now, but are they still going to be playing at this level come April, May, and June if they get that far?
I mean, Marchand, he was out to start the season, so at least he got a break a little bit. And I am convinced that, like, Bergeron cannot, like, just the fact that he's such a good player that it fuels, like, as a person, it fuels him as a good player, so he'll never slow down, so.
Yeah, like, this was going to be part of our agenda for later in the show, but since we're here, we might as well stay here with just a league-wide perspective and see what else is going on. Like, I know it kind of contradicts what I was saying earlier, that I can't say I've watched the rest of the league with as much attention paid as I have in seasons past, but, like, you see headlines from around the league with, like, Boston doing really good, New Jersey being good. The two teams that are the most fun for me this season are the team that just beat the ever-living shit out of the Hawks on Saturday night in the Seattle Kraken, and then the Buffalo Sabres are a lot of fun, which is the first time anybody said that in, like, 10 years. Go ahead, Joe.
That's all because of Tage Thompson, who's scoring, like, 50 goals in 30 games.
And he's, like, 6'5", and he skates, and he does, and he's an incredible magician with the puck. Like, he's just fun to I feel like once or twice a week, there's a Tage Thompson highlight on my Twitter timeline, and it's always like, holy shit, he should not be able to do that, but he does.
Do you guys think Buffalo will make the playoffs, though?
No.
They're technically above Florida in points percentage, but, like, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, that says more about Florida than it does about Buffalo, I think.
I know, but I would love to see, like, I don't mind Florida, but I would love to see Buffalo get in above Florida and Pittsburgh. Just for new kids. I'd like new kids on the block to be.
Yeah.
I heard they had a bunch of hits. New kids on the block. You know, one team we can toss out is the New York Islanders. I have no feelings against them. I don't really despise them, but they're just boring. They never do anything. Like, they had one fluke.
They've never done anything.
Yeah.
They're like
not
their
since
entire
the
existence
80s.
Has been yeah, their entire existence has been like grind and fucking 2-1 hockey.
Yeah, yeah. Just full on Barry Trotz mold. Like, I just get them out, get Buffalo into the playoff picture. That's my wish for the second half of the season. It's also kind of hilarious that the Red Wings are still not going to make the playoffs. I guess that rebuild's going to be in year 13 or 14 for them. Maybe saying that's going to come back to haunt me in 4 or 5 years because the Blackhawks will be in year 13 of their rebuild, but whatever. The Flyers like started off like gangbusters and then completely exploded. Montreal, we've talked about them enough. There's Ottawa.
I'd like to throw out there that I was made fun of for saying the Jets would be good this year.
Well, I mean, that feels like something I would do because the Jets, they seemed like they were Connor Hellebuck and then a whole bunch of other people that just weren't going to be good enough. But apparently it's working this year.
I mean, they're a mediocre team that has a good goalie in net.
Good might be underselling, like Vezina quality goalie right there.
Yeah, exactly. But they're like,
it any way you want. I called it.
I know. Well, performing well and being good are not the same.
Right. Thing. And making the playoffs in a weak West where like there's like four good teams in the Central because Minnesota's underperforming.
They're actually not. If you look at like their stats across the board, they're pretty like mediocre or below in every way.
Hey, I didn't say that their analytics would look good. I just said that they win games.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Like I said, I think the difference between being good and performing well are different, or winning are different things. So.
Well, fair enough. But when the godforsaken St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup with like no future Hall of Famers, they should be stripped of it because their analytics weren't good. You could make the argument, and I would back you on that, but they unfortunately still fucking won, and it still haunts me.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Their analytics were okay. They weren't great, but they were okay.
They weren't great, though.
No. There's only a couple of teams that didn't have good shot metrics in like the last 15 years, and St. Louis is one of them.
Exactly. Hey, speaking of St. Louis and teams that are bad this year, the Blues are behind the Avalanche in the standings right now. So I don't.
Yeah, good. Fuck them.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they started with like a 10 game losing streak.
Yeah, yeah.
At one point, weren't they like up there with the Hawks for like we were scared?
Yeah. No, they were. I think early on the season, a few of the tank standings updates that we did, I think St. Louis was down there. It always felt like they were going to at least get out of the basement of the NHL standings, but I don't think, I mean, they got to leap Colorado and Edmonton or Calgary just to get into the wild card spot. And they're, you know, they're 6 points back with a game in hand on Edmonton and half the season to go. But I mean, I haven't seen very many indications that they're turning things around at all. They've lost their last two, so.
As long as they're above the Hawks, as far as like not getting a good pick, I don't care.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind them making the playoffs just and then lose embarrassingly in the first round just so that they don't have a chance. Like, this is what I want. I wish this could happen with every Central team. You all yes. make the playoffs. You can't do that.
Dallas is in there again, and Dallas is another team I feel like similar to the Jets, like, yeah, cool, you're going to make the playoffs, but then what's going to happen? Probably nothing. So have fun, I guess. What else we got? I don't know if any of you were following the press conference today in Vancouver, but that whole situation is bad, to put it gently. Like, they are it seems like they're going into another rebuild for like the fifth time in the last decade, which just really, really saddens me to see one of the Hawks' most fierce rivals from back in the day completely unable to get out of its own way. So that was fun. But other than that, I've enjoyed the Kraken's rise. They don't really have any hateable players on their team. They had a 7-game road trip, which I remember seeing at the start of that road trip, somebody was describing it as a big test for them, and then they swept the goddamn thing. So they seem to be doing pretty well, although I got questions about their goalies.
question their defense, too. I mean, they not the best.
They literally said, fuck defense, we're going to score.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, we're just going to score by committee and get it done.
They don't.
If you look at every team,
waivers.
Yeah, I kept when I was doing the preview for that game, I was like, they literally have no players above like almost like I think all of them were 0.8. Well, I think one of them had 0.83 points per game. And I think they're the only team that didn't have at least like that's in the playoff race. Excuse me. They didn't have at least one player at a point per game or better. But then if
fucking
you look down their lineup,
14 goals.
I think their team is like the perfect foil for the Blackhawks because they may not have like the top tier clear cut. Like this is our number one line that can go against any line in the NHL, but they have four lines that are all pretty good. And the Hawks don't have one line that's pretty good.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that is the worst case scenario for the Hawks is to face a team like that. Like Seattle has 12 players with at least 20 points this season, and they have 17 in double digits. The Hawks have three guys with at least 20 points this season and only 11 in double digits. To give you an idea of how much better Seattle's depth is compared to the Blackhawks.
So, yeah, their offensive depth, yeah.
But I still those I know you said, Betsy, their defense isn't good, but Martin Jones and Philip Grubauer in net do not appear to be getting it done for that team.
No, it's so crazy that Martin Jones had a worse save percentage than Stalock did. Not worse than Mrazek, but that's because Mrazek let in like everything except one. But I don't. It's just such a weird thing. Martin Jones is on a playoff team doing a like sub. He's like an 8-8 or something.
Yeah, I thought the era of sub 900 playoff goalies had died out in like the early 90s. But Seattle's trying to fix that for everyone. There's one other team that's having a very good regular season again, and they're probably like the analytics darling of the NHL, so we can call them the Shepherd Price of the NHL and the Carolina Hurricanes.
I'll accept that.
They always have really good possession numbers, but I have a theory with them, and I wanted to bounce it off the three of you, and maybe you'll tell me I'm an idiot. But Carolina is like at or near the very, very top of like every possession metric that exists out there. I feel like at some point, like it's almost like too much possession because at some point you should be able to put the puck in the net and then you end possession of having the puck. So I feel like it's almost, they've got the puck so much. It's a sign that they can't finish and that it's going to be the same problem when they get to the postseason that they're not going to be able to score enough goals.
They have to figure out how to be the LA Kings from like 2012 and 2014. Both teams were exceptionally good. Like they were at the top or near the top of the all possession stats, but in the regular season they couldn't score. In 2012, Quick pretty much had to make sure, you know, like they could outscore their other teams by like two goals instead. And then in 2014 they finally figured out how to score. And like I think Vegas had that problem too when they first came into the league, were exceptionally good possessionally but couldn't score enough to overcome, you know, to like beat out some of these other teams that were both good at possession but could also score. Shay might have more insight into that since Vegas is their team.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like that's the same thing for Carolina where there is that lack of finish there. I mean, Andrei Svechnikov is supposed to be their big finisher, and now they got Max Pacioretty already. There's a reason they took on that contract from Vegas.
Yeah.
But at some point you have to, your possession only means so much, especially if you're not, like if you're dominating quality, then it does mean a lot, but you need to be able to finish those quality chances. And that's why they have brought in more goal scorers, but they're not really seeing that pay off for them.
And Pacioretty's close to being back, right? Like I know
I believe he is back.
Okay. I feel like I saw a headline somewhere that he was nearing return. I don't know if he actually came back or not. I could look it up, but who cares? It's the East.
he's at least skating in pre-game warmups.
Yeah.
So he's very, very close, if not already back.
Really quickly before we get too far away, I wanted to circle back to the quick discussion on the Seattle Kraken game on Saturday night. And like when Mrazek gets yanked, they bring in Stalock, and he started getting the Bronx cheer from the crowds. Now, should point out that they did some sort of like stadium bar crawl before the game. So it's very possible that the entire or significant portions of the crowd were extremely overserved, and that going down 6-1 with that crowd in the building was a very bad combination. But I genuinely felt bad for Alex Daylock at the end of that period, because he wasn't the one who gave up 6 goals and 7 shots. He makes one save and he's getting the standing ovation from the crowd mocking him. I felt bad for him in that moment. But maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Well, to be fair, I bet you most of the people in the building didn't. I bet you they didn't know who the goalies were. Let's be honest here. The people that went to that game, it was a weekend against the newest team in the league, and there was a bar crawl beforehand.
It was their second sold out crowd.
Yeah, they sold out
this season, and they didn't come to watch hockey.
Yeah, which, I mean, I went to the game Thursday and I was barely there to watch hockey because I knew, although the Hawks won, so I guess I shouldn't complain too much. But yeah, it was an interesting atmosphere because it felt very like, on the game Thursday, like it almost felt like you were at like a giant picnic. Like everybody was just hanging out and talking in the seats and kind of watching the game, but kind of not really, just because this whole season's just a throwaway. And I hope that as the Hawks get better, that goes away, and that like the people that are really there to watch the game and are really into the team start coming back more and more. But it just seems like that's the reality of the situation now. Like they're trying to get anybody into the stadium any way they can, and apparently it's working. More power to the Blackhawks PR and event staff or whatever, whoever's in charge of coming up with all these ideas, because it's working. But It's a weird environment going inside that stadium. At least it felt that way Thursday. I'm going to try to go again a few more times to confirm if that's the reality, because the tickets will be cheap. But yeah, it just felt odd to be watching. Go ahead, Mel.
It's like going to a Cubs or Sox game in the dog days when the team is not good, but the Yankees are in town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, it doesn't matter which team it is for the Chicago baseball team. Like when you're bad and it's that stretch of baseball where it's just miserable and the players are getting tired and you just go to drink and like hang out at the ball game.
Yeah, you go because it's summer and it's fun to be outside hanging out. Yeah,
and you're hanging out with different fans and talking shit and whatever. It's like, it feels like that. But the Hawks didn't used to have that because they were so good for a stretch that like everybody was into the game because they were fucking winning. So, yeah, I don't know. It had to be a bizarre atmosphere for sure on not just Saturday, but the one you went to.
And actually, like the baseball game comparison it feels like a really good one, because I think most hockey games you go to, there's like you can like feel some of the like intensity or like the anxiety that's building as the game's getting really close. Like even that Hawks game, they won 3-2. Colorado pulled the goalie in the last minute and it didn't
a goal waved off too.
Yeah. And it just didn't, nothing really felt that tense. And like, it never felt like nervous or anything. And like, sometimes you can feel that in the building from just, it's oozing out of everyone around you, but none, not any of that this time. Just the kind of the nature of the beast.
By the way, just the way I described how boring baseball can be, I'm pretty sure Betsy's just like, yeah, that's why I tune you guys out. So I'm like, yeah, you know, when you go and it's just super boring.
When we're talking about football or baseball or wrestling or anything that's not hockey, really.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Or we can start talking about Gwen Stefani again if we wanted to bring the conversation back to 2 weeks ago.
Mm. Okay. All right.
The only other thing worth talking about related to the Blackhawks is that they sent Lucas Reichel back down to the AHL on whatever day that was. It was on Friday because it was between the Thursday game against the Avalanche and the Saturday game against the Kraken. And it's just kind of weird because it seemed like Luke Richardson had said a week before that they were going to keep him around, and then they didn't. So I just thought it was weird. Shay, what about you? What were your thoughts when this news came down for you?
Sorry, I zoned out for a second. What news were we talking about?
The Lucas Reichel. Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah.
They promised that they would, that if they were going to bring him up this season and it wasn't a emergency call up, that they were going to keep him up. Because that seems like a broken promise.
That was the thing that made it so weird, is that like Luka Richardson had said like a week before, he'd been quoted after a game as telling the media that they were expecting Reichel to be around for the long term, and now he's not.
Yeah, no, he was playing better than a lot of the Blackhawks players in the bottom six.
And so, in the top six, for that matter, he was one of the best forwards. Maybe
it's a thing about, like, maybe they realize I need to keep him away from this team because they're going to continue to lose a lot of games, and maybe keeping Lucas Reichel on a team in Rockford that's going to win a lot more games than the Blackhawks.
That's what Richard Davidson did mention, that as one of his.
I was just about to come to that, because there was a quote from the GM himself when he talked to the media, I think on Friday morning. It seemed like he knew that there was going to be some pushback to the Reichel demotion.
For sure.
Because he was pretty much the only thing worth watching about this team for a while. And I'm efforting pulling up the quote, but what were you going to say, Betsy?
The quote was, "Let's call a spade a spade. We're chasing most games here, and I don't necessarily think that's conducive to extremely positive development. There's great situations in Rockford where our young players have to go out and defend a lead." So he gave two excuses, right? He gave the generic, we want him to go play meaningful hockey down in Rockford to be the go-to guy, blah, blah, blah. And Reichel's minutes were cut in that last game. He didn't even play 13 minutes. But that's such a bullshit excuse, because the fucking front office can just, I mean, Richardson controls those minutes. So if you want him to play meaningful hockey, play him more in the NHL.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Like there's
easy solution.
Yeah. There is an argument for, you could make Reichel do all those things in Chicago if you really, really wanted to. The point about the only point I would mildly concede that Davidson made was about like playing important games and like we're always chasing, so maybe he has to learn how to defend a lead. Like, I guess kind of I could understand that point, but it feels a little cop-outy. But it also, I feel like that is the closest we might get this entire season to Davidson publicly saying that we have no desire to win any games, because they're chasing these games, they're losing on purpose. This was part of their plan. They don't want to win this year. And so obviously another part of their plan was keeping Lucas Reichel down in the minors all season, and only calling them up if they needed him, which they did when Kane got hurt. And now that Kane's back to Rockford with Reichel. So it just, this is the part where I'm sure I've railed about this before, but this is where it's such a cynical approach to an entire hockey season that I hate on general principle, and I can't get over that, how much I hate the way the Hawks are going about what they're doing right now. I get it, Connor Bedard, yada, 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 whatever, but it's just, I guess I'm just going to die on this hill, I think is where I'm at.
I think the problem is that we're all like, yeah, we might get Connor Bedard, but there's that thing in the back of your mind that is, well, what if you don't get him? Then this
season
was for nothing. And that's not to say that Fantilli and Carlson and Michkov are not going to be great players, but they're not going to be worth the pain, the frustration of everything that happened this season, the trade of DeBrincat, you know, like just all of that.
And I'm not even sure if Connor Bedard's going to be worth it, because they need more than just one guy. Connor Bedard's a hell of a guy to get, but
I think we won't know if it's, I think it'll be one step too worth it. We have to wait to see the rest of the picture and hope that Davidson is better than the people that were in charge of Buffalo and Edmonton and a bunch of these other teams forever.
Detroit, which I mocked about 10 minutes ago. So
I don't think Detroit's ever gotten.
They've never quite bottomed out the way the Hawks are.
Yeah, there's like I think Bedard's probably going to be better than Eichel, but like those are the two closest like McDavid and Eichel are the two closest we've come to of like, these are like the best players of like this current generation when they were drafted. And then they went to two restarting teams, and both of them were actually farther along in their restarts than the Blackhawks are now. So, but they both failed, and Edmonton kind of picked it back up, but they lucked out with Dreisaitl. So yeah, it's going to be this right now is pain. It's not going to be worth the pain even a little bit if they don't get Bedard. And even then we won't know if it's fully worth it until years from now.
Yeah. That, I think that's the thing is it's going to be several more years before we found out about all the other pieces, the Korchinskis and the Nazers and Sam Renzel and Savoy and all these other guys that are hopefully part of the future, but are still, majority of them are still teenagers. So it's going to be a while before they get up here. We're just kind of waiting it out, waiting for something good to happen. And but hey, at least Lucas Reichel looked good, right?
Yeah, he looked good in all the games he was up this last time.
Yeah, he's a very good forward. They with Stan Bowman's last first round pick made a decent selection.
Honestly, the weirdest thing about Bowman is I think all of his picks in the latter half of the first round were pretty good. Like, you're never going to get it's very hard to get generational talent in, but all of them were pretty good. Not any of them other than Teravainen did anything for the Blackhawks, really, but still, they were good. But his top-ish picks, you could say, weren't the best.
No.
can confirm. Especially that number 3 and number 7 or 8, whatever Bocas was.
Eight.
Those two, like... Yeah, 8. Like those two picks, like if those had panned out better, and we've already discussed why they didn't work out, so we don't need to rehash that. But like, I think the ultimate conclusion is they didn't work out as well as any of us hoped they would have. And if they had worked out better, we're probably not in the situation that we are in right now with this team. But they didn't, and here we are watching the literal worst team in the NHL for another 3 more months.
Are they the literal worst team in the NHL?
Yes.
No. Yeah, they just hit 32 on every single shot, major shot stat.
Hey,
in terms of the standings, I know they passed Columbus, but that's
pretty good
winning streak. Columbus won a couple days ago, so they're back in front. Don't you worry, Shay.
I am worried.
Columbus is Chicago, Anaheim, Columbus. So Anaheim is really the team you got to look out for.
It's Anaheim and Columbus that I'm standings watching night for the
Anaheim has a negative 82 goal differential. Chicago's at 60. Like that's how bad that is. Like
I just want to throw in a quick hot take before we move on. Had Bowman's first round picks all worked out, we probably wouldn't be using the free version of Zoom. just my column here.
I have nothing else to add to that. That's pretty good. On that note, we're gonna pause and we're gonna take a quick time out, and then we'll find something else to talk about on the other side of this break. But come on back for whatever the hell that topic is going to be. Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And as promised before the break, we do have a topic, folks. We still have more show to get to. If you were paying attention to the site at all within the last week, we did a big roundup of updates on all of the Blackhawks prospects while there were a handful of days off between leading up to that Colorado game last Thursday. And so if you're interested for a much more in-depth discussion on any of those players, the last one ran today, which is Monday as I'm talking. But the they're all carved up into zones with Europe and NCAAs and the Ice Hogs. And then today was the CHL USHL one. So if you're interested in any of those Blackhawks prospects, feel free to visit secondcityhockey.com. And there's articles up about all of those leagues. But just wanted to do a quick whip around to each of those areas and see if there's anything interesting happening out there. So Shay, I know you were out in Europe. So what's going on out there? Anything?
So the best news is that Ilya Safonov, who's in the KHL and was drafted in 2021 as a sixth round pick, is basically killing it for AK Bars in the
AK. Is it AK Bars or isn't like AK like their version of like football club? Like, maybe. Sorry, go on.
All good. And so he's got 21 points in 44 games. Somewhat was drafted as an overager, but he isn't that old. Very skilled, very talented, but he is a Russian player, which means that if they ever want to bring him over, let's just say the Blackhawks haven't had the most luck with Russian players.
Yeah, still waiting for Kayumov to make his way over. And
Kayumov and Shalyanov.
Maxim Shalyanov, that's the one I was thinking of, yes.
Yep. The bad news is Michael Krudel, who is a higher pick in 2020, got 0 points in 21 games in the Czech League, which is not one of the world's best leagues. And he's coming off a season where he had 5 assists in 21 games in the Swedish Hockey League, which is a much better league. And so that sort of disappearance of production for a defenseman is troubling.
And wasn't Krudel briefly with the Ice Hogs for a season or two?
Yes.
Yeah,
so he played with the Ice Hogs.
Yeah, he came over to North America, and I don't think it went as well as he hoped, and then he went back to Europe, and it's not getting any better. Krudel's even down in, like, the second tier of Czech hockey for a bit, so...
It's not going great for him.
Go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say my favorite like little piece of information on Ilya Safonov is that he was the guy that Kirby Doc collided with in the World Juniors pre-tournament game that broke Kirby Doc's wrist. Just the fact that the Hawks drafted him a year later was just a bizarre coincidence.
Well, he's very clearly talented, so there's a reason they did that.
Yeah, and it's go ahead. I don't know if there's any other players to highlight.
The two players at the top of the draft of this year's draft are European skaters, which is Leo Carlson and
Matvey
Michkov.
Apologies to all of our Russian listeners.
Michkov, who didn't get to play in the World Juniors for obvious reasons, people have said for like years that like it's kind of Bedard, but then Michkov is not far behind. He looks like he's not far behind. I mean, he's struggling to score in the KHL, but like he's dominating every other league he's been put in. Mm-hmm. He's probably, and he also hasn't gotten the best opportunity with his KHL team, and playing with a different KHL team where he's gotten a better opportunity. He's playing a lot better.
Yeah. He got they loaned him out to like the Russian equivalent of the AHL. And he was playing really well there. And then he got loaned out to another team back up in the KHL.
Yes.
And has been lighting up the league again.
It's like if the Lightning put a really talented player with Syracuse and they're like, can the Blackhawks play him?
Yeah. If any of the American professional leagues could let you loan players between professional level teams. Happens all the time in European soccer leagues. Does not happen here at all. So.
Both those play. Carlson's also killing it, and he killed it at the World Juniors, and that's saw his stock go up. I think if the Blackhawks are unfortunate enough to lose this season and become and have the highest lottery percentage, and then still fall to third, either one of them is a good choice because I don't think even as talented as Michkov is, he's not getting drafted ahead of Fantilli at this point. I don't think.
Yeah, it
just seems like there is the Russian drama as well as.
Yeah, I think the more interesting thing might be is if Leo Carlson sneaks into third because of the Russian drama, as you said, and also because Carlson's a very, very good hockey player.
Carlson's a very, very good hockey player. I'd still take Michkov every day over him.
Fair enough. Betsy was our Ice Hogs correspondent for this round of updates. So anything interesting happening up in Rockford?
So they moved into third place. They're firmly in third place. They're not that far behind the second place team. Milwaukee. So that's actually very cool for them, because I don't think they've finished outside of a wild card spot in years. And they're doing it in a way that isn't just because of their goaltenders, or because they have a couple of really good scoring guys. It's been much more balanced two-way hockey from them. They have a good top six. They have a good bottom six, though they rotate the bottom six guys more. But like Slavin and a couple of those guys are just really good defensively. They handle their own shit pretty much. Mm-hmm. So, but in terms of players, obviously Reichel's doing good, but he wasn't around as much for this last little bit. He popped off, you know, a point per game before he got called up to the Blackhawks. But after him, you've got Gutman, who I know we talk about like Shaw kind of guys. He's not like Shaw in terms of personality. He's not really a rat or anything like that, but he lives in front of the net and he's little. He's not a big guy. He's built, but he's a short player. But he will out-muscle, out-maneuver, out-whatever much older AHL players in front of the net to get goals. And he's pretty good playmaker too, like not as good as like Reichel is or a couple of the defensemen down there. But if you like a player that all he wants to do is live in front of the net, Cole Gutman is that player.
Yeah. And he was an interesting one because Tampa picked him in 2017 in the sixth round. I don't believe he ever signed there. And the Hawks signed him in the offseason. It seemed like kind of a throwaway, like, yeah, they just need a body for Rockford. I wouldn't get too much about him. But then he's been pretty good down there for it is the AHL, but you know, you can only play well in the games you are given, and he's doing that. So
he's easily the best prospect behind Reichel. Like a full like prospect, not I don't know if he'll make the NHL because you've got players like Slavin who I think will carve out that Kruger-like niche in the NHL and will do well there. While Gutman is not as good defensively, and we'll just time will tell whether his offense will, because even though he does well against obviously the older AHL players, they're not as big or as strong or as fast as NHL guys. Otherwise they'd be in the NHL. but yeah, I mean, he's pretty much the only other forward that's like prospect that's worth much. Like Hartman's he's doing okay right now, but he's been like low compared to last year. He's still one of those, like, I still don't know the difference between him and why Reese Johnson got a call up, even though I haven't minded Reese Johnson that much this year. I was really hard on him last year because I think they did him a disservice putting him in the NHL before he was ready. And it showed last year. And I don't think he's completely ready now, but he's better than he was last year.
But is he still a nice guy? Do we know if Reese Johnson is still a nice guy? Okay.
But like Hardman's the same type of player. I don't really get why they chose one over the other. And then we already talked about Slavin. I think he would be good. Tepley goes hot and cold like crazy. He's in a very bad cold streak right now. He just had like 0 points in his last, I think he's up to 10 games now. But he had done a couple of point per game patches earlier. So it just depends on how, like who he's with and all that kind of stuff. And that's pretty much it for the forwards. There's not that many down there, which is kind of the whole point of the Blackhawks. They don't really have stock in forwards, especially high end ones. And then for defensemen,
the present situation.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then for defensemen, you've got Regula finally hitting his stride. He had a really bad couple of first months, and I recommend reading Pope's article. I know I posted it in the prospect update that I did, because he talks about how like mentally draining it was, because he feels like he's NHL ready and he had to overcome that. And it's a good mindset for young players to have. And his ability to get over that, I think, is a testament to like him as a person and will make him stronger in the future. But anyway, he's been like just killing it. Offensively, but I think he's doing fine defensively as well. There are a lot of people that kind of see Regula, I think, a little bit as a two-way guy, and he can be, but he really is an offensive defenseman at heart. He can defend, but they're going to want to put him in offensive situations when he gets up to the NHL to maximize his potential. That's my opinion.
And and he's like since Ian Mitchell's been up with the Hawks and kind of forgot Ian Mitchell was even on the team because they keep scratching him. And Isaac Phillips got called up. Like, Rugula's pretty much been the guy on the blue line lately, right?
Yeah, he is like, I think he's like 0.01 points per game behind Phillips. So if you're like, Phillips is better, I think, defensively than Rugula is. But yeah, he's been, I don't think he's in the number one. I think Galvis has been getting more minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forget about Jacob Galvis. That's another name I keep forgetting about.
I know. I feel bad for him a little bit because he gets lost in the shuffle, but he's probably the best two-way guy on the team. He's been with Rugula sometimes, and when he is, anytime Galvis is with an offensive defenseman, he plays the defensive guy. Anytime he's with a defensive guy, he pops off offensively. So he's got like a dual ability that could be useful. I don't know if it'll translate or not. Like, these are all, can they translate?
Yeah.
And then you have the guys that are quiet defensively. You've got Creever, and then you've got Vlasic. Oh, and fucking Bruce. I always forget him because he came in really strong and then he was kind of quiet the last little while. And I don't know if that's because he got kind of pushed back a little bit for Rugula coming in and just like taking over. But Creever and Vlasic are both guys that are, Vlasic was injured for a little while and then Creever is just so quiet. It's crazy how you can ignore a 6'7" guy, a guy on the ice, but he like disappears. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing for a defenseman. It's just, how does he do that? Like, yeah. What is that?
The one other player I wanted you specifically to highlight, because it's, you know, it's a smaller, it might just be a blip on the radar, but apparently Arvid Soderblom's had some issues since going back to the Ice Hogs after his latest stint in Chicago.
Yeah, so first of all, he's injured right now.
Oh, that too.
But they made him play like the night afterwards, and it was because he had those like two not great games in Chicago, but like not great in the sense that they were like the thing that the Blackhawks love to do, which is make their goaltenders face like a bazillion shots and all tons of high danger. And then he went back to Rockford and played literally the next night. And I mean, he got pulled pretty much immediately, like just a
like
few minutes.
Peter Mrazek style?
No, he like five goals on 12 shots.
Oh, not okay.
So
not
a little bit more,
bad, but yeah.
But the way the team in front of him, and like I was trying to say earlier, they've been better defensively than I think they have been in recent years. But for some reason, that game they were like all out of sorts. And I think right before Soderblom got pulled, he made like five two or three heroic saves. And then like earlier he had made a bunch of heroic saves and then he got pulled because he let in a goal. And it was one of those, it felt at the time like one of those, the coach is pulling to like shake up the team and hope makes better. Q used to do that a lot. We'd pull Corey Crawford, even though it wasn't Corey Crawford's fault that they were like down. And then in the next game, he still just didn't have it.
Okay.
He looked kind of not great. And then again, the team in front of him wasn't playing good, but he probably was like, I don't know what's happening. So maybe the injury is a good thing. He got injured like less than 6 minutes into his third game back. Maybe it'll give him time to like regroup mentally. Maybe you can talk to Gula about that. because yeah, I don't, this, so when we were talking earlier about Davidson saying he doesn't want Reichel to get in, like learn bad habits and be in this like negative environment of the Blackhawks, Soderblom might have been up there too long. Like, did they break him? Because he had been excellent to start the season, and now he's got it's only played in five games, but it's still a sub 900. And I don't think he had a single five game span last year where he would have a save percentage under 900. So,
okay.
Not the best.
So, yeah. So the interesting part though is like, I feel like the rare seasons that Rockford has made the playoffs in the last handful of years, they've like gotten in like on the last like two or three games, just sneaking into a wild card. But that, as you said, like it does seem like they're cemented in a playoff spot for now, at least. So I guess that's encouraging. You know, maybe Lucas Reichel will get some playoff time down there and more than just a throwaway, that weird first round series thing they do in the AHL. But I wanted to quickly run through the CHL and USHL, easy for me to say, because that's where a lot of the big names in the organization are. Kevin Korchinski, Nolan Allen, and Colton Dock are all together on the Seattle Thunderbirds. Korchinski left the World Juniors, or after the World Juniors, he went back to Seattle and immediately started scoring points again. So even if you say, fairly say he was underwhelming at the World Juniors, it does not appear to still be bothering him because he went right back to his club team and started scoring again. Nolan Allen's been fine. Colton Dock is going to be back at some point. They no word on when, but he's still carrying the injury he sustained at the World Juniors, but it doesn't require surgery, as Ben Pope from the Sun-Times reported. So hopefully he's back soon. Ethan Del Mastro got traded in the OHL to the Sarnia Sting and immediately got put on their top defensive pairing. So he's going to get a ton more ice time after having a really good tournament, really good World Juniors tournament for Canada. Some of the, like, it seems like pretty much all of the Blackhawks prospects that were on this report are doing well, just about. I mean, Gavin Hayes is lighting up things for the Flint Firebirds in the OHL. Paul Ledwinski's still, he's just got named the team captain, and he's playing top-line center minutes in Kingston. Samuel Savoy, which, I might be saying his name wrong. I don't know if we ever established how to pronounce his name. He's also in the QMJHL, which is very French, so there's a very high possibility I'm pronouncing this name incorrectly. And apologies if I do, but he is scoring a ton of points. He's at 39 points in 35 games, so he's over a point-per-game pace. The only guy who's really kind of having a rough go at the moment is Nils Juntorp, who's playing with the Dubuque Fighting Saints. He hasn't scored in his last 8 games, so that's not great, but he's still playing top-line minutes at least, so there's that. And then Sam Renzel is playing with the Waterloo Blackhawks and doing just fine. He's still very young and raw talent, several years away from the NHL. I really don't think there's anybody on that list that has done anything to hurt their stock as a draft pick so far. So there's that, which is nice. Sure, Bits, there's not a lot of like the Michael Krutel situation that Shea was discussing. So there's all that. Mill, did you have any of the college stuff? I know Eric wrote it, but I know you had written a few of them earlier in the year. Did you have any stuff on the NCAAs?
You know what? Let's just refer back to Eric's article on that, because I say this every time, but like, I hate judging kids at certain levels, because you see how many guys are hyped at college, and so many of them come into the NHL level right as soon as their college season's done, and only a few of them really shine.
Yeah,
right off the bat.
I guess the biggest key I've picked up from college, like, if the guys are killing it as freshmen and sophomores, and then they make the jump to the NHL, that's something worth keeping an eye on. But if it's a guy who's a senior or like a fifth year senior, that's thriving in the NHL or thriving at the college level, you may not want to expect too much out of them when they come to the NHL, like the Drew LeBlanc.
Drew LeBlanc,
we'll call that the Drew LeBlanc.
Kyle Bond or whatever.
Yeah, Kyle Bond. Yeah, exactly.
I think too, though, like, that's like more specific to hockey. Because there are guys who play 4 or even 5 years in college and other sports who do succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a game speed thing, I really think.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of similar to the situation with the CHL and USHL, that most of the Blackhawks prospects who are playing in college are doing at least fine. None of them are really having bad seasons. The only one, and I think Shea had written about this earlier in the year, Landon Slaggart at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Had a great season. But one of the Blackhawks reporters tweeted that, like, Notre Dame's team across the board is having a very bad season. So
Ryder Rolston is doing
pretty fine. Ryder Rolston is, he's producing pretty well for a guy who's been mostly doing third line minutes. So, that's something, I guess. But like
I'm waiting for the Kaiser kid to come up.
I think Wyatt Kaiser's had some tough moments, but I think his season's been overall pretty good. Same thing with Connor Kelly. And then Dominic Bassey at St. Cloud State was He's having a much better season than I think anybody expected him to have. Drew Commesso is really doing well after there was a game early, and somebody tweeted this because I didn't even realize it. His numbers got tanked because one of Boston's games early in the season, I believe there was a 5-on-3 power play with Commesso in net for a full 5 minutes because Boston got two major penalties at the same time, and he got shelled. It gave up like 5, 6, 7 goals during that extended power play, and that just like tanked his numbers for like the first half of the season, and it looks like they're finally starting to recover now. So there's that as well. It looks like all the college prospects are fine, and then fingers crossed that maybe Frank Nazer gets back on the ice before the season ends for Michigan. That may not come until at least next month, though, if it comes at all. So, yeah, any other Blackhawks prospects we missed? Any other big names or anything? I think that was pretty much a full tour of the system.
No, I think that was everything.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm out of Blackhawks things to talk about unless anybody else has something else to offer. I mean, we're probably going to come back next week and talk about a 4-game losing streak. It's at least somewhat weird / kind of funny that they bring Patrick Kane back after winning 3 games in a row without him, and then they immediately get shelled, right? Like, I don't have a good reason to explain why that's happening, but it's just hilarious to me that it is.
Too bad. Maybe he's got, like, I used to joke that the Blackhawks' bad luck since 2015 was, like, the price they had to pay for the 3 cups in 6 years. Maybe Patrick Kane's, like, bad luck, like, or good luck from those years is running out now, and it's just his bad luck tank now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess all the fortunate bounces that happened for like a 6-year stretch are coming home to roost, and then maybe there's some karmic justice happening for some of the things the Blackhawks did away from the ice. So yeah, I don't know. It's just it was just a weird week of things that happened that their best player goes out for 3 games and then they win 3 in a row for the first time in 2 months, but. Whatever. We'll probably have more losses to talk about next week. So we'll get into that then. But let's transition to our favorite segment of the episode, the food portion for the best food themed hockey podcast on the internet. I just have a lament here, and then I think I can swing this into a discussion. At the game Thursday night, I went to around the 300 level looking for the steak sandwich at the Ironworks booth that was, I believe, right outside of 308. And it's not there anymore at the United Center, and I'm very upset about this because it was just a wonderful steak sandwich with some chips that were fine, but just it was like the perfect stadium food. I'm not going to pretend it's like a culinary masterpiece of any kind, but it was a staple for me for going to Blackhawks games. I would always get that, and now it's gone, and I didn't really have a chance. It just kind of annoys me that like. It seems like all of the good food options are down on the 100 level. And I get it. That's where the high rollers are. That's where the people with money are. That's where they're going to put the best products. And you come into the stadium at that level so you can access it. But it seems like every stadium does this now. And it just like put some good shit upstairs too for the rest of us. Right? That's my lament.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had this issue with them going back a long time now because they continue to get rid of things that I enjoy. I mean, off ice things I enjoy, like food. Clearly, the product sucks now, but like they used to have a place up in the 300 level called Mexican Fiesta. That was my favorite spot.
Yeah,
and we used to like go to the game early, and you know, you get your real fans program, and you get Mexican Fiesta, and then. You put your feet up and enjoy the good old hockey game over the PA. And it was kind of like a tradition.
Yeah.
And I started going to Ironworks later, and those chips are actually pretty good. Kettle chips.
Yeah.
With beer. And they would have Goose Green Line, which is a good beer to have at the stadium. And I don't know. It's kind of personal because you make it like your kind of your thing when you go to the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a good barbecue place up there now, so I don't want to get like too unfair. Like I had a really good brisket sandwich, so maybe I'll just have to start a new tradition. But it was a thing I did for like a decade, so it's just kind of a decade plus at this point. And I just kind of bummed that I can't do it anymore. So I guess the way I swing this over to Shay, Betsy, like I don't know how often. I guess I would ask if you have any, either one of you have any stadium specific traditions, either at the United Center or whatever stadiums you frequent. If there's a food item that is your go to, what would you pick?
Unfortunately, no. I haven't been to enough Blackhawks games to venture outside classic snacks thing. The hot dog, the nachos, okay. The
well, I mean, like among those things, do you have a go-to like even if you're not at a Hawks game, do you have a go-to stadium food option?
If there are chicken fingers at a stadium, I will never say no, because that is one of the hardest things in the culinary world to fuck up.
That is very true. That is top, like high on the list of most reliable food items. Like just cook the chicken like that. That's really all you got to do. Drop them in the deep fryer, take them out. Get the oil off, throw them in with some fries and hand it to me, and I'm going to eat them quickly. What about you, Betsy? Do you have any stadium food go-tos?
So the two stadiums that I went to the most were what was Phipps, but is State Farm now for the Thrashers, and then what is Bridgestone for the Predators, because they're just the closest ones. I don't remember getting much other than like hot dogs and pizza at like what was Phipps. They have a food court down at the bottom, so you can get like Moe's and stuff like that too. That's in the like mall part of what's State Farm now. It's not bad.
Is there a Waffle House in there somewhere?
There actually was a Waffle House,
as there should be.
But they didn't serve eggs there. They only served waffles and like other like hash browns and stuff like that. They did not serve eggs.
But did they serve grits?
They did serve grits.
They're all right. That's, we got to the important stuff.
So, and then, but for Nashville, they have some, I've never sat in the 300 level because those, like, I've never wanted to be near the, like, you sucks people. I know that's only like one section, but I always hated that. And I tried never to sit in the 200. And I've sat in the 200 level way more than I have in the 100 level. So they have, rotating stuff in the 200 level, but they often have a Food Network rotating thing down there. Okay. There's a lot of Southern Food Network-y kind of things, but the best thing I ever actually ate there was like this like soba noodle thing. And I just remember sitting there like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever eaten. I've got chopsticks and I've got like a thing of noodles at a hockey game. It felt very like disconnected, but it was so good.
I love the idea. I like sitting in a stadium seat trying to eat something with chopsticks seems very complicated.
Oh, I immediately was like, can I have a fork? And they did not have one. So I was like, I need to go to another place, but it was too close to the end of intermission. So I just was like, cool, I'm trying. And I'm not great with chopsticks, let me just tell you. I just like stabbed them in there and then rotated until I had enough to eat it. But otherwise, Nashville has some, what they rotate in that top thing is pretty good. I know one time they had like a buffet up there that was all Southern foods, and they had some of the best. They had like three different flavors of collard greens that were essentially like spicy, sweet, and normal salty. They were all so good, and I would like spicy stuff.
All right, now I have an idea. I think they should do this at every stadium, but it should be like a rotating cast of local restaurants. Like, let some place come in and serve up its whatever its local flair is. And
does Chicago have like Taste of Neighborhoods?
Atlanta, Taste of Chicago.
Well, yeah, there's the Taste of Chicago, which is the whole city, but like every little neighborhood has its own
festival. Okay, yeah, okay, because Atlanta has that too, and they do it at they did a Taste of like whoever like the hotel district at Mercedes-Benz one time at a football game. I didn't go to it, but I remember them talking about, they're like, come to ours, we'll have vendors that are, you know, and you just had to pay a certain amount of money. You could go and essentially get samples of food from every neighborhoody kind of thing that you wanted. I was kind of jealous because That sounded delicious.
Yeah. You know what the worst, we moved up our recording time this evening, so we're all doing this right before dinner, and I think we're all about to go eat a very unhealthy amount of food, but it's going to be worth it. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Thanks everyone for hanging out this evening. Thanks to you for listening. One more time around the group. Shepherd is on Twitter at Jehosa's Witness. Mill is at Mill182. I am at DMelt57. Betsy's not on Twitter, but she's at SecondCityHockey.com under the name LBR. And that's also where you can find all of our previews, recaps, prospect stuff, whatever it is you want to read about the Blackhawks. We've probably got something there for you. So feel free to check that out. And also, if you want to go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, that'd be wonderful as well. But thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll talk to you next week.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.